The whole idea was then to establish some sort of international support measures to support these countries, to be able to make sure that they can actually catch up with the others. Unfortunately, only 7 have graduated. So out of 50 years, I wouldn't say this is a very particularly good record.
Hello, this is the Weekly Tradecast, a podcast brought to you by UNCTAD, the UN's trade and development body. I'm Sarah Toms. We're exploring how major events are shaping trade and development and how that affects billions of people around the world. This week, we're talking about Bhutan, the Himalayan kingdom that measures its success in gross national happiness. Bhutan and its 800,000 people now have an extra reason to be happy after graduating from the UN list of least developed countries into full developing country status. What's more, it's only the 7th nation in 50 years to make that jump. Bhutan was included in the first group of least developed countries, or LDCs for short, in 1971. Over the last few decades, it has made remarkable progress on various social and economic metrics. That includes big improvements in poverty levels, education, and life expectancy. So how did Bhutan achieve this feat? And how could its development path help the 45 countries still classified as LDCs? Well, joining me now to explain all this is Paul Akwimi, a director of the Africa Least Developed Countries and Special Program Division at UNCTAD. Born in Ghana, he studied oceanography in the UK. A keen diver for many years, he's committed to preserving our environment both in the sea and on land. Well, welcome back, Paul. So nice to have you here.
Good to be back.
Now, how does the UN actually define least developed countries? And what issues do they share and what actually sets them apart from each other? Because, of course, they're very different, aren't they?
Well, I think one of the key things to remember is that approximately 50 years ago, as you mentioned, the UN was able to see that there are a lot of countries which had structural problems, historical problems, and geographic problems, and they were being left well behind other developing countries. And it was very clear that at that point, decided through a lot of research, in fact, that UNCTAD had undertaken, that there is a need for special treatment for these type of countries. Otherwise, they will not be able to catch up to the rest. So they created this least developing country category. And primarily what they're looking at is per capita income, human asset indices, and also economic and environmental vulnerabilities. The whole idea was then to establish some sort of international support measures to support these countries, to be able to make sure that they can actually catch up with the others. So this has been going on for the last 50 years. Unfortunately, as you mentioned, only 7 have graduated. So out of 50 years, I wouldn't say this is a very particularly good record. And we have learned a lot from this over 50 years. And UNCTAD is striving towards trying to define a new development paradigm to help these countries move forward. The UN is still looking at these countries, still supporting these countries, still trying to galvanize the international community to support these countries. And we're also trying to look at suggesting that perhaps the international support measures that we created 50 years ago need to adapt and to be changed to support these countries in this new economy that we've seen that the world is progressing towards.
Well, that leads me to my next question. I mean, why is it so rare for least developed countries to leave that list? And what should be done to make it more commonplace?
The problem is that these countries don't have the ability to produce goods and services. They're primarily commodity-based economies. So they essentially sell their raw materials, the same economic model that they've had for the last 80 years. And it's important that everybody is able to produce some goods and services. And you can only produce that if you have the right ingredients to do that. That's to have strong institutions, to have human capital, to have the right infrastructure, to have the right rule of law, to have energy, to have entrepreneurs and the private sector there.
How did Bhutan graduate to developing country status? And where does it go from here?
Well, Bhutan has done significantly well over years. The whole point of our graduation is that you have to carry out and you have to achieve this criteria over a number of years. And since the 80s, Bhutan has GDP has been steadily been about 7.5% up until this day. In addition to that, you'll note that a lot of the primary healthcare, now 95% of the country has primary healthcare. The average life expectancy went up from 47 to 68 years. So they have made progressive steps forward. And as you mentioned, their gross national happiness philosophy also has contributed to that, because that's talking about a balance between economic growth, environment sustainability, culture and heritage, and also social progress. Mm-hmm. So this is critical. And Bhutan is unique in itself because it is very remote. It has contrasting and extreme landscapes, and it is linked very much to environmental shocks because of the geographic location of it. So it has progressively continued to move along its strengths and move forward. It has a lot of capacity to export electricity through its natural dams and water. And so it has used that asset to put into the social side, as I mentioned, to primary healthcare, to education. And so it has systematically and progressively moved forward along its own development plan.
That's really interesting, isn't it? Tell me a bit more about the unique and unusual aspects about Bhutan with regard to the happiness index and environment. And is this something that we should be considering more, perhaps, when we reevaluate the definition of least developed countries and developing countries?
Well, I think for starters, the happiness philosophy works well for Bhutan because they created this whole concept and idea. I think when you want to export it to other areas or other countries, you are going to run into cultural differences about defining happiness. Mm. And there'll be a lot of discussion at the intergovernmental about what constitutes happiness. Some countries may say financial gains contribute to happiness. Others will say religious beliefs constitutes happiness. So it's very complex to be able to export that totally. But the sustainability, the environmental side, is very crucial. And as you note, in the world today, people are recognizing that you need to look after the environment. Sustainability is critical for the well-being and continuation of mankind. And for Bhutan, which it relies a lot on its environment, 70% of its exports come from electricity, which come from rain, water, and they are very clear that they know that if they cut their forest down, they will not have that export. So it's the environmental sustainability aspect of it is very critical. And the criteria does include the environmental dimension. However, I think countries need to pay more attention to it because we generally give it a lot of lip service rather than really ensuring that it becomes an integral part of our development policy. And that is understandable to some extent because policymakers and governments have short terms. They need to deliver jobs. They have a lot of pressure. But at the end of the day, environmental sustainability is critical for economic development.
What lessons can other least developed countries take from Bhutan's effort and success?
Well, I think one of the key lessons learned is to have a long-term vision and plan and political commitment to that plan. I think that's critical. Bhutan has and has been steadily working on it. People need to recognize that development doesn't happen in 5 years. It's a 30-year long road that you have to travel on. And it's important to keep your eye on the ball at the end of the road. And it's important to show that all institutions and the government and the people are working towards that ultimate goal.
Fresh challenges arise when LDCs do graduate to developing country status, because obviously it's a big jump, isn't it?
Well, one of the things that we like to say is that graduation is only part of your journey to achieve sustainable development. It shouldn't be considered as the end of the game. And it's important to ensure that not only do you continue beyond graduation, but you don't fall back into least developed country status. That's very important. The second thing is that there is in the international support measures that do exist. We believe that we need to rethink them to make sure that they support these LDCs in a way that they need to transform their economies to move forward. One of the key things that many LDCs are concerned about is that once they graduate, they lose preferential access to markets and things like that. So we have to help them in the sense to be able to ensure that they are producing goods and services. So the international community needs to go beyond indicating you are going to lose these preferences and support them strategically in helping them define more strategic policies and strategies to be able to enter other markets as well and also have the right quality standards and certification to enter these markets that their preferences in before.
All right. Well, that's great news. Thanks so much for that, Paul. It was really interesting. That was UNCTAD's Paul Akawumi, who was this week's guest. Tune into the Weekly Tradecast next week and every week for more insights on the most pressing issues around the world of trade and development. And there's even more on our website, unctad.org. I'm Sarah Toms in Geneva. Goodbye for now.